Good morning to everybody. It's good to see all of you. Welcome this morning, the beautiful Lord's Day, and the opportunity to worship God. Thank you for the invitation that the church has given to me to be with you Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of this week. I am from Kentucky. My mother is still living. She lives over in Elizabethtown. I grew up in Louisville and went to school at Moorhead and Eastern, and then preached for several years in Paris, Kentucky. So this is real close to home. My wife would really like to have made this trip with me, but we've both been sick this last week, and she's got it worse than I do, and she couldn't make the trip. But she certainly sends her greetings, and we very much appreciate the invitation to work with y'all in this way these last several days. And I always enjoy being with Sid and Kim and their family. He's been our friend for a long time. We've done a lot of things together, trying to serve the Lord, and appreciate Sid very much in a lot of ways, as I know you do too. I have a sermon I like to preach, and I guess I like to think about it more than I've preached it. Is a sermon on attrition, and it is my personal conviction that the greatest tool in Satan's arsenal right now for fighting against Christians is not persecution; it's attrition. We live in a world that wears us down, and our prosperous lifestyle can do that. The many demands that are around us, the 24-hour bombardment of news that can wear us down. This slow wearing down, and before long, can't put your finger on one particular thing that's cause somebody to fall away from the Lord. Can't name one thing, but it's just a lot of little things that slowly just wore them down. I see that happening a lot. I feel it in my own life. I feel the pressure and the stress of life and what it's doing. And all the more important for us to be here today. I thought about that as we took the Lord's Supper and how important it is to keep our minds at the cross, to stay there, to work hard, to take us back to the scene. Make our mind remember and think about what happened there and the significance of it. And to pray, God, please keep our lives at the cross. So I thank you for letting me be a part with you as we worship God today. And I know I have a specific responsibility now in talking to you about the subject of elders. And I know I need to get on with that. We have tried in the course of these lessons to address lots of different things about the relationship between elders and the church though they are overseeing. And the lesson this evening at 5 o'clock, an elder's wish list, has been the most enjoyable kind of culmination to this lesson and has evolved in a lot of different ways. And so I invite you to come back this evening at 5 o'clock and get inside the heart and the mind of an elder and hear what they wish for that maybe nobody ever asks them. What do you wish for? But if you ask them, I want you to listen to what they might say. God's plan, as revealed in the New Testament, is for local congregations to be overseen by a plurality of qualified older men whose work is described as being shepherds, or they are pastors. They feed and care for people. Preachers are called upon, preachers like Timothy and preachers like Titus and modern day preachers are called upon to teach about an eldership and their work and qualifications so as to set in order local congregations so that they are what God intended them to be. It's interesting in Titus chapter 1 where that instruction is given to a young evangelist. This young evangelist, Titus, was doing this work of setting things in order on Crete, the island of Crete in the Mediterranean Sea. And later on in chapter 1, makes the observation that Cretans are lazy beasts and slow bellies and lazy people. And if that is generally the description of the people on the island of Crete, then the church would have been made up of people who might have themselves been inclined to laziness. And I thought about that and imagined some of the difficulties that shepherding a group of people inclined that way might be. Whatever the difficulties are, you know, that a culture might present, the people there, doesn't, the work's got to be done. And set things in order, and qualified men are to oversee and help these people, no matter where they come from or how they're inclined, to grow to Christ more and more day by day. Local congregations are to be overseen by a plurality of men. There may be just two. There could be more. I know of congregations where there are 10 or 12 or more elders that are overseeing a group. But many times, that eldership is a fragile arrangement. A fragile arrangement. These are men, after all, who are older. They are elders. They may succumb to some kind of a debilitating illness. And while they may still live, they may not have the abilities any longer to do the work expected of them as elders, and they would have to then step aside. Or they may succumb to death. And if there is if there are just two, the death of one of those elders would result necessarily in the dissolving of an eldership and leaving the congregation without the oversight or without the spiritual orderliness that the Lord intended for local churches. This same kind of thing, or these same kinds of problems, could happen to an elder's wife. She may die and make it necessary then for an elder to resign. Or in some other way, an elder may become unqualified and he may have to step down. I'm trying to describe some of the ways that we should appreciate an eldership can be a fragile arrangement. It'd be wonderful if every congregation was blessed with an eldership of 10 to 12 men, but very many times it is just two, or a more fragile number. And then in our time, jobs change. People have to move, and an eldership may be dissolved because a job change, having to move out of town. The point I'm trying to get at is that a wise church will think about the development of elders for the next generation. In fact, a wise church will see this responsibility as an ongoing one. Even if there are elders, a church is at work preparing men to serve them now or in the future. And so the question I want to ask, and ask you to think about with me, is where do these men come from? How does the church get elders? I know right now this church does not have elders. Okay, so right now or in the near future, I'm sure you're thinking about this. How do we get elders here? Well, I want to talk about that, not so much on an isolated sort of crisis part of a church's history, but generally speaking, how does a church go about developing elders? Elders are developed over time. Elders grow. When you look at the qualifications of elders, 1 Timothy chapter 3 and Titus chapter 1, the qualifications themselves tell you that this is a process, and a church should understand the process, understand the time involved, and then be at work in this patient way to bring into the mix the things that over time will develop lots of men who have both the desire and are otherwise qualified to serve. For instance, a man to serve as an elder must not be quick-tempered. He must not be an irritable or a hot-headed kind of a fellow, not easily provoked to anger. He must not be self-willed. he must be someone who is not insistent. It's sort of their personality is not inclined to want to get their own way all the time. You know, strong-headed and just bull their way through things. An elder is not to be a man like that. He manages his household well. So he knows how to help people through problems. He knows how to help people mature. And he knows how to help bring them to Christ. He keeps them, his children, under subjection and under control with all dignity. He has faithful children. He is above reproach as the steward of God. The things given into his trust, he has shown himself quite able to handle them and in a faithful and good way. And he is able to teach. Not just a volunteer to teach Bible classes or preach a sermon, but he has thought about this work. He maybe has studied about this work of teaching. And he has tried to develop his abilities so that he teaches well. He teaches effectively. He is an able teacher. And again, those things don't happen overnight. How does a church develop people who are like this? He is a man who is to be patient and gentle in dealing with other folks. He is yielding and kind. He's inclined to be equitable and fair and mild. He's not inclined to be a bitter or impatient man. And an elder is to be just. He is to treat people properly and with integrity as he is keeping with the commands of God. Now, I've not named all of the qualifications. I have identified some I wanted to mention. And I mentioned these to show, to emphasize the process that's necessary. A church needs elders, and you don't just ask, okay, need a show of hands, who wants to serve as an elder? This church wouldn't do it that way. I'm not suggesting that at all. But what that does let me say is what a church does need to do is to realize then we've got to be at work all along the way to bring those things to bear upon all the members of the congregation that will help some of those men develop in these specific ways and in this combination of ways, culminating then in a qualified man desiring to shepherd, to look over the welfare of people beyond his family and look at the welfare of a local church. How do you go about developing all of that? Well, let me say that you need to look for certain qualities in people. I want you to think about two people. I'll give you an example. These two people are sitting in a Bible class. One fellow has a comment and he raises his hand, and at some maybe controversial point in the class, he is eager to explain to the class what his take on a particular passage is. And he says it pretty clearly, he says it pretty boldly, and when he's finished, you can kind of tell he's happy that everybody's had a chance to hear what he has to say about this particular passage. He may be dead on target, and he may be right, and that's not really my point now. And nor am I really trying to emphasize or trying to suggest that he is arrogant or something like that. I don't take that from what I've just said. But then another man in the Bible class raises his hand, and he wants to comment on this passage of Scripture. And when he makes a comment, you can tell that he is a little bit cautious, and he is mindful of how his words are going to be received by others. He's not looking to cause problems. In fact, he's wanting to help the teacher, and he's wanting to help the class by what he has to say. And that might be the only reason he has raised his hand, is he thinks that what he has to say might help others. He makes his comment rather briefly and stops. What I want to say is a congregation needs to find men who think congregationally. And not everybody does. Not every man does. And it's not bad if they don't. It's not bad if they don't. There are people who kind of who think in their world and their ideas and maybe the circle of family and friends pretty close to them, but they're just not inclined to think congregationally. That man has a place to serve in the kingdom of God, and that man can go to heaven. I'm not suggesting otherwise than that. But that man's not ready to serve as an elder. An elder must think congregationally. If he raises his hand to speak, he's probably going to think, what is the effect of what I'm going to say upon others? Am I going to be edifying? I certainly don't want to say something that's hurtful. He is thinking congregationally. So that is one thing that a congregation can look for as they watching young men, young families as they are developing. Something else that a congregation can do to grow elders is to realize that there will be false teachers. Congregations will be faced with false doctrine. And those who are shepherding a local church need to be aware, both aware of the different doctrines that might threaten the congregation and how to handle those times. So it might very well be that a church plans a study of prominent or emerging doctrines of men that threaten or might threaten the Christians in a particular locality. Study these doctrines in a class, evaluate them together, and then talk about how do we respond to some, how do we respond to a false teacher? How do we deal with this matter congregationally? So either when there aren't elders or an existing eldership preparing the next generation, realizing that part of the work of an elder is dealing with false doctrine and those who are teaching it, then help them be ready to do that. Help them know how to process, to think critically, and then walk them through this delicate yet important work of contending with those who might threaten the flock over which the elders are responsible for protecting or overseeing. Elders have to work together. And inside a room and behind closed doors, elders have to work together. They have to develop the skill of listening well and working peacefully with each other. When there are diverse personalities, they must not be self-willed or stubborn or cranky. They must not be cantankerous in their behavior toward one another. Look at Romans chapter 12, and I've made note of verse number 18. Romans chapter 12 and verse number 18. If possible, so far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. Where do elders come from? Elders come from people who read Romans 12, verse 18, and they live their life in such a way that as much as it depends on me, I'm going to live at peace with you. I know it may be difficult, and your personality and mine may just be like oil and water, but that doesn't mean there's going to be problems. As much as it depends on me, you've got peace with Phil Morgan. Now, I don't know how you're going to handle me, but all I can control is my side of the table here. And Romans 12, verse 18 says, as much as it depends on me, I'm going to live at peace with you. And elders come from congregations in which preachers preach about this, and people listen to it. And it is the atmosphere, it's the teaching that members of congregations grow up with. And they understand this is what a Christian's supposed to be like. And from this fertile bed of teaching, Bible teaching, comes men who serve as elders. And they get behind closed doors, and they're meeting with people whose personalities are different from them, and they're talking about some really difficult issues. How do they handle that? They handle it like Christ wants them to handle it. They handle it like Christ wants them to handle it. But not because it's a time for an elders meeting or some immediate thing like that. They handle it that way because this has been the fertile spiritual bed from which they've been growing for years. And they've learned to treat people this way. And they bring Christ into that elders meeting room on that difficult night. So obviously elders don't just appear as volunteers step forward when congregations need elders. You might even be afraid of somebody who just does that. They're just inclined to step forward. And so the need arises and they do what they always do. They step forward. Elders, that's not how you get elders. A congregation is not surprised by the men who come to serve as elders. They're not surprised. They've been seeing this day coming for a long time. Maybe you watch this little boy grow up to be a young man, and you watched him choose a wife, and you saw the kind of man that this woman chose, and you watched them raise their children, and you heard him pray, and you saw him preach or teach, and you saw the care with which he gave the scriptures. You saw how he handled health problems and tragedies and hardships in his own life. You saw humility and faithfulness and love. You've seen this guy grow up. You've seen him care for other people and work with new converts and try to reach those who are lost. And then as he grows up into being an older man and someone begins talking about him serving as an elder, and nobody's surprised. Nobody's surprised. They've been seeing this coming for a long time. That's how a church gets elders. I mean, and I see my brother here, and I'm thinking about your comment in Bible class. I mean, folks can move in, folks can move out. There are a lot of different situations from this. But the way the church at Fayette gets elders is to make this a spiritually fertile bed where preachers like Sid Latham diligently and prayerfully preach the whole counsel of God. And he does it to the best of his ability. And Bible class teachers prayerfully and diligently prepare for their class and teach those classes well. And moms and dads pray at home and convert their children and bring them up in the Lord and team them up with other Christians. And you pray for each other and you help each other grow. And you deal with false doctrine. And you work through hard problems. There's nothing like there's no bed of roses here at all. But this is what you're doing. This is who you are. And this is what you stand for. And from that kind of fertile spiritual bed, there are people who desire to serve the Lord, to step out and will shepherd the flock of God and are grateful to find somebody to team up with them or two or three or four men to do that. That's how it happens. There's nothing special. There's nothing voluntary specifically about that. You get elders by growing them. And in the long process of serious attention needs to be recognized, and I'm wanting to put it on the table so that this church goes forward, or the church at Newcastle goes forward in a conscious and purposeful way to be bringing into the mix everything that's needed so that this church now and in the future, in future generations, is blessed to have men serve you like God wanted them to serve you as shepherds and overseers. I want you to look at a challenging passage, and because I can't just pass over this. This is a difficult one for me, but I want to look at it with you before I stop this morning. It's in Acts chapter 14. Acts chapter 14 and verse number 19. So you've heard me say that elders are grown. And I believe that. I believe that's what the scriptures teach. The qualifications, I think, argue for that as well. But Here in the New Testament time, within 2 or 3 years, elders were appointed in a young church. So how did that happen? Let's read these verses first. Acts 14, verse 19, down through verse 23. But Jews came from Antioch and Iconium and won over the crowds. They stoned Paul and dragged him out of the city, supposing him to be dead. But while the disciples stood around him, he got up and entered the city. The next day he went away with Barnabas to Derbe. After they had preached the gospel to that city and had made many disciples, they returned to Lystra and to Iconium and to Antioch, strengthening the souls of the disciples, encouraging them to continue in the faith, and saying, through many tribulations, we must enter the kingdom of God. Verse 23. When they had appointed elders for them in every church, they prayed with fasting. They commended them to the Lord in whom they had believed. Okay, now maybe I'm missing something in my calculations, but the best I can tell is that these churches, in verse 23, blessed to have elders serving them, were churches that maybe were 2 or 3 years old. Not very old at all. So how did qualified men come to exist in an environment like that? Well, maybe these were relatively new Christians, but relatively new Christians among a group of Christians that themselves were very young. And so maybe relatively the men who were serving as elders were relatively older than those they were serving. Maybe these who were appointed as elders came from the background of Judaism, and so they had a rich heritage in a relationship with God. They knew about God and faith in God. They knew about obedience. They had influenced their families, and so their children had grown up being nurtured and cared for by God, not long after being Christians, they would otherwise be qualified to serve as elders. Or maybe according to Acts chapter 2, verses 9 and 10, on the day of Pentecost, which was perhaps 11 years before this, there were some people converted on that occasion, on the first Pentecost following the resurrection of Jesus. There were some people converted then who moved back to their home area, and they had been Christians for a long time. That was certainly a possibility there as well. But the principle that I'm looking for in all of these is that in some way these servants developed over some period of time. And the principle of developing a reputation and a family and the things that are involved in that, the ingredients for that, those principles, are still true, still valid. So where do elders come from? Elders are grown. And it is a wise, current eldership that understands that and works to make this congregation, the one they are overseeing, a greenhouse in which all the stuff's coming in there, and elders for a future generation are grown. It's a wise church, with or without elders, who sees that and works to make this an atmosphere that will let good and qualified men grow. In Indiana, where I live right now, we're quite proud of our sweet corn and tomatoes and watermelon and mushmelon, and we're proud of those things. And I particularly like our sweet corn. My wife gets bushels of sweet corn and she will put it up in the freezer. However much we like sweet corn, you know what? We got to do what everybody else has got to do. You got to wait for it to be planted, watch it grow, Wait for it to mature. Wait for the harvest. You gotta wait for the process to happen before you can enjoy the fruit of all that. It happens with sweet corn, and it certainly is the way it is with an eldership. Sweet corn's got to grow, and elders do too. I hope that you'll make it your heart's desire to grow as a Christian yourself. To work with your wife, your children, to bring them to the Lord. Don't let this attrition, don't let the world and its pressures win the day in your family. Team up with people here to make this church stand for the Lord. You're spiritually vibrant. You're on fire for serving the Lord. Deal with false doctrines. Do it lovingly. Do it clearly. Stand for the truth. Live at peace with each other. Pray for each other. Watch folks who are growing. Encourage those. Whisper into the ears of young people, young men, say, "Man, I'm watching you, and what you're doing with your family is an amazing thing. I hope one day you'll want to serve as an elder." Plant that idea in the minds of young families and pray for them. All these and many other ways, grow the men who will bless this congregation by overseeing them, overseeing you in the future. Be faithful in serving the Lord yourself. If you've never obeyed the gospel of Christ, we hope that this morning you'll decide to put on Christ by being baptized and take up your place, being baptized into Christ for the forgiveness of your sins, and take up your place in His family and His kingdom to serve Him and help others go to heaven. And then with what God has given you, what abilities He has given you, and none have been left out, make your way of living as a Christian being, you're always going to step out of your comfort zone. You're always going to be stepping forward. You're always going to be trying. You're always going to be moving in the direction of Christ. Make that the way you live your life. And the needs of this congregation will always be met. And the way God will use you, you'll be surprised as you watch what happens in your life. If we can help you this morning in any way to serve the Lord, let us know while we stand to sing this song.